Hey guys, welcome back to Met Gala Luncheon. I'm your host, Sarah Van Turenhout, and I'm joined by
Rosalinda.
And this is the podcast where we break down our favorite reality TV shows and just dive into the craziness that ensues. This week, we're looking at episode 7 of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, Fashion Faux Pas.
So we start at the very first Park City Fashion Week.
Yes, where, you know, like all Housewives franchises, drama ensues.
That's right. And it's really funny. It seems like all the Housewives franchises have figured out some way to have some kind of fashion show, even if it's usually some kind of fashion week. If not, like Atlanta, people are doing their own collections or doing collections that don't exist, like Kashif or Sheree. But this time it's an actual event, and we get to see Meredith and her progeny and his amazing collection.
Yes, the Brooks Marks collection, which has been just, I guess, kind of hyped up until now. We're like seeing the fruits of his labor for the first time. But before we even get to see that, we see a little bit of Mary again. It's like this show just sprinkles in a little bit of Mary, which apparently, I'll just bring up a little side gossip here, but apparently she was originally going to be a friend of the housewives, and then due to the production shift, they made her a full-fledged housewife. So that's probably why she doesn't show up as much, which I appreciate. She can keep her friend of the housewives role.
Yeah, it seems like she was like, she's just always sprinkled in. She's like a little bit of Tabasco.
Yeah. But yeah, we see Mary entering into the fashion show where she inevitably runs into Jen. And of course, the Bravo gods interfered, or, you know, just fate. Jen and Mary happened to sit next to each other. And this kind of like reminded me of when Bethany went to a fashion show with Kelly, Kalora, and Ben Simone after the incident where Kelly was like, I'm here and you're here. And then literally the next day they had to go sit in a fashion show together, like literally right next to each other. So again, we kind of have a little homage to that with Jen and Mary. But unlike Bethany and Kelly, Mary tries to like be nice to Jen, and Jen is just not having it. She's just kind of like stonewalling. I'm just here for the fashion.
It's still about her smelling like hospital, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see these two ever reconciling. And you know what? At the end of the day, sometimes you just have to accept some relationships aren't meant to happen.
Definitely. And actually, it's one of those things where you're just like, you were kind of waiting for a bunch of drama, and it always seemed like, oh, cool, there's going to be a fight. And then there was like nothing. And it was just kind of, it was awkward. I don't think it worked.
Yeah, it was more awkward than a fight. And like, we see the ladies make, or some of the ladies make their walking debut. Whitney is walking in one of the fashion shows along with Meredith, showing off her Meredith Marks collection before Brooks does his collection. And overall, Whitney did great. Meredith looked great as well. None of them fell. None of them made any weird faces. So kind of boring.
Yeah, it just seemed like we like built everything up for the ladies walking and things happening. And it was just like, okay, that was fine. But then we get to Brooks and his collection.
Yeah, the piece de resistance.
And when we mean piece, we mean one.
Yes, literally one piece in his whole collection, which I will say Jen made some solid points. Does one piece make a collection? No, it does not.
It doesn't, like literally. And then he broke, as we were discussing at some point, he broke Project Runway rules, which is never brand yourself if nobody knows who you are.
Yeah, I literally have no idea who he is. And he was like boasting so hard, like Brooks Marks. It's just an obvious choice for a new fashion line.
Well, I just love that he was like, he liked the CK at the end.
Yeah, the KS.
The KS was like.
And like, I don't know. My thing about this whole thing is that I love Adidas. You know that. Like, I have some serious brand loyalty to Adidas. But, like, I have 3 sweatshirts that look like a Brooks Marks, like, collection, I guess. But it's made by Adidas. Like, is there not some copyright infringement? What has he been doing this whole time to make one sweatshirt or in sweatpant, which he's just copied off of somebody else?
I know. It looked like he, like, you know, when, like, when you used to go off to summer camp and I would have to get name labels for you. It was like if I had sewn all the name labels on the outside of your sweats. And that was a Brooks Marks original.
Yeah.
I was just like, you know, whatever passes, I mean, I know sometimes people say, oh, I don't know, that's fashion. But in this case, I was at the same point. And actually, it became kind of comical after a while, because even Jen was like, I was rocking that sweatsuit. And when he makes another one, I'll rock it again.
Yeah, she'll rock that next one. And this, I just have no words, because I was really going hard for him last episode or last week, where, you know, he put in a what I thought was a lot of work into this fashion show. And yes, of course, it's still a big deal that it's his first fashion show. His dad should have been there, which again, we'll get into it in a bit, because we do see a FaceTime call with his dad. But anyways, what the heck was he doing? Like, I could have done that. Where is my fashion show? I know my name is a bit long for a fashion label, but, you know, we can make it work, as Tim Gunn would say.
Exactly. So it was just kind of, I don't know. It sometimes, and it's true with a lot of the children of, you know, kind of thing. But, you know, Brooks is having to, kind of compete against other franchises like, you know, Bella Hadid and like...
Yeah, and Gigi, but like, they don't have a fashion line.
No, they don't have a fashion line, but I'm just saying that this is like the children of, right? Like, so Lisa Renner's kids have like DNA, I think is the name of their like sports line. And then there's in Orange County, one of the girls has her own kind of fitness line. Like, everybody's doing athleisure, which is great, but I don't know. I don't see it. And I was actually really, it was really funny listening to Jen, because now that we have found out after much research that she does have her own fashion brand.
Yes.
And so the fact that she was actually nice in not trying to diss him too much, but she's also like a woman who has a very large clientele. She has a really big business in fashion. So I'm sure she was like just biting her lip, kind of like saying, okay, is this really a collection?
Well, yeah, because her pieces were showcased just before his fashion line came, or fashion single. It's not really a line, a fashion dot maybe. But yeah, so she knows what she's talking about. I thought the shade was warranted.
But it was nice shade. I was saying she could have just kind of gone off on this, but she didn't.
No, and I mean, I'm actually intrigued to see how... I don't think Meredith will have like her confessional comments about it. But regardless, I don't think there was anything wrong with her, you know, poking a little fun at the lack of a collection in Brooke's collection.
Right. But the more important thing about this entire thing was not the collection or not, you know, the ladies walking in the show. It was really a lot more to deal with Meredith and Seth's marriage and how it's affecting the kids. So we see Brooks get a FaceTime call from his dad, and his dad doesn't handle it really well. Like, it's a very awkward kind of call.
Yeah, like the first thing he said, or at least the first thing we see, is that he's like, y'all look weird, and were y'all abducted? Because, you know, Brooks had his hair slicked back and Meredith still had her runway outfit on, which is just like, why would you start a FaceTime call with, like, what's up with y'all? Like, he didn't know what was happening that day, or, you know, it just felt very rude.
Yeah, I think he thought he was being funny, but it was like, I mean, he should have known that, you know, tensions would have been running high. You know, Meredith had a lot going on, not just with the show, but getting everything together and then trying to get Brooks together. So, you know, he should have said, hey, how's it going? You know, something very normal. And they did call him on that. So that was actually a good thing.
Yeah, but then he was kind of just like, I'm getting anxiety from this conversation. Like, y'all need to stop. It is just like, your son is calling you out for being kind of a shit dad. I mean, not a shit dad, but, you know, like, he should have been there. Regardless of his situation with Meredith, he'd be like, fuck it, I'm gonna come see my kid on his big day.
Right, so, and basically it just shows how Seth and Meredith aren't really handling this separation very well, because it's really about themselves. They're not thinking about how this is going to affect any of their kids.
Which, like, I don't know. I mean, I can't totally fault them for that, because, like, all of their kids are adults. So, I mean, I'm not saying they shouldn't take their kids' feelings into account, but, like, at that point, you know, whatever issues you have with each other, that's that. But that shouldn't come in the way of your relationship with your children.
No, but that's what I mean. I think he was taking Meredith's, like, I need more space, more seriously than Brooks's, are you coming to my fashion show? Because I don't think it was just like, he knew it was Brooks's fashion show. I think he and Brooks probably offline had conversations about when his fashion show were, and he should have been the bigger person and called up Meredith and said, I realize this is happening. Oh, I'm just going to bounce in, watch the fashion show.
And leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. But besides that little blow up, it was pretty amicable the whole way. And then we kind of move on to, you know, a series of scenes and interactions between the ladies where they kind of like just get very open and raw, which is usually something saved for like season 4 and 5, where we kind of have been with these ladies for a bit and then they sometimes sprinkle in a therapy session or two. But we actually get some nice, cool, and just down-to-earth conversations with these ladies. And we start off with Heather, and the conversation is between Heather and Whitney. And it all starts off with Whitney asking about how she started Beauty Lab Cosmetics, and that led to her talking about her previous marriage and subsequent divorce. And she was just pretty much talking about the hypocrisy in the church where her husband could get, you know, divorced 5, 6, 7 times and get remarried and stay in the church and keep it standing. Well, she's been divorced once and she's pretty much been casted out like a pariah.
Yeah. And it was actually really interesting to see her take on all of this and how she had to try to figure out how to start a life of her own because she wanted to be independent. Even when she was in the marriage, it sounded like she said she had a bunch of side gigs. And so he was setting her up to be someone who needed to be taken care of, which I guess is basically part of LDS culture. But now she had to figure it out on her own, and she was doing a really good job of figuring it out on her own. But again, you get this part where she's just like, I have somehow failed because I failed in my marriage.
Yeah, and she also just feels that she doesn't even deserve to have had a good marriage or have a relationship now that she's been divorced because she just doesn't really have a lot of self-worth or self-esteem. I mean, I think she pretty much said point blank, I don't deserve happiness or love because she feels that she needs to protect her children, which makes sense. But it's also just kind of sad from a human perspective that she doesn't think that she needs love.
I know, she's an amazing self-accomplished woman and she's like, she's got it together, but you can tell it's just, there's just so much sadness there in some ways that you're just, you want to root for her even more. Go, Heather, go.
Yes, yes. And then, like, it was nice to see later in the episode that she actually has a nice heart-to-heart with her children about it. So you see, go from her talking about her feelings, how her divorce has impacted her view on love and the like, and then you go to see a scene with her children where she's kind of explaining those same things. But, like, before she has a heart-to-heart, you see her talking about her eldest daughter's boyfriend, which is really cute and sad at the same time. I mean, I think that's just Heather in a nutshell, just like very cute and sad. And she's talking about how in love they are and was describing how pretty much the bare minimum of any human relationship of, oh, well, you know, her boyfriend listens to her and they like each other and, you know, they respect each other. And she was like, I like that for them, but not for me.
Yeah. And I think this was a hard conversation for her because this is like basically where she wanted to tell them that they were going to be, that she wanted to leave the church.
Yeah, no, exactly. And so we see her kind of break down what it was like to be a divorced woman in the LDS church. And all of her daughters were really supportive. They were kind of just like, we love you no matter what. You've given us this really strong foundation to be the women we want to be and stop worrying about us.
Right. I know. I think it was great of her to have all this affirmation from her daughter saying, you're the best mom ever. And we're going to be stronger, better women for it. And we're going to have better relationships. And hey, we don't like going to church either, basically.
Yeah, they're like, if you're not going to church, we don't have to go to church, which is a fat mood. But yeah, anyways, I mean, she finally doesn't have to have this kind of excuse of, well, it'll hurt my children if I find love or date someone or see, you know, just casually see someone. So her daughters have kind of given her some freedom now, whether she takes that or not is to be seen. But here's hoping.
And the next scene, we move on to Jen talking about her mental health and marriage. So this kind of feels like a capstone episode where we're figuring out everybody's like problems. So, you know, Meredith and Seth are not good at relationships. Heather feels really bad about basically, you know, not being a strong woman. And Jen is a hot mess.
Yeah, no, I mean, we see her getting ready and we get a little background on kind of, you know, her dad's death and then the subsequent events that happen after that. So apparently she's on antidepressants and anxiety meds, and she kind of goes through how that started. And we find out that after her dad's death, she was really depressed and anxious for obvious reasons because, you know, Sharif couldn't even make it to the funeral. So she didn't really have much of a support system back at home so where she could lean on in this time of mourning. And so she just kind of, in the not clinical terms, lost it. And she was lashing out a lot, and that almost caused the demise of their marriage between Sharif and Jen.
Yeah, and we talked about this earlier at some point, but, you know, the thing about Sharif not going to the funeral, upon further looking into what Sharif does, now, we have to admit right up front, Sharif has like a gajillion jobs.
Yeah, he has a lot. He's not just the assistant coach, because we were like, why, if you're the assistant coach, I mean, obviously you're important, but are you that important that you...
Like, you could have gone to a family funeral.
Yeah.
Like, you could have flown and flown back. I don't really understand why that would be. But he's also like a sports agent, and he has several other gigs, which is quite impressive.
He's like what Lisa Barlow aspires to be.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I get he's probably a very busy man, but... You know, it's also one of those things like, well, why didn't you come back for your wife's, you know, father's funeral? It was a little bit strange. And then, you know, Sharif kind of tells her at the beginning that that's not what you do in the Shah house. You know, you don't take medication. You just basically, you know, man up and then, you know, pray and it'll go away.
Yeah, and obviously that did not work, surprisingly enough. You can't pray it away. And so she went on meds, which was kind of, I guess, a really big deal. And I think he was on board because they had to have an intervention for her, pretty much saying that you need help because you're just lashing out to everyone. So she's on meds right now. But I think it just, this whole conversation around mental health and medication is definitely a cultural thing. I mean, we know about it. I mean, like, we're Hispanic, and like, that's, you know, mental health and depression, like, those are like white people problems.
Yeah, it's true. People of color tend to think that basically you're supposed to be stronger and that mental health is literally a weakness you can kind of, you know, kind of shake off. And, you know, just if you can pull yourself together, put one foot in front of the other, you know, you shouldn't be, kind of wallowing in self-pity or being sad. That's like some kind of luxury thing that only white culture has in it. So that was a very interesting take. I mean, it was good. It was interesting to see how that was kind of explored in this episode. But it again shows how the fact that Jen is definitely overcompensating. Her entire life is overcompensation for the fact that she feels so insecure and sad and lonely, which, you know, as much as, you know, you'd like to just dislike all of Jen's behaviors, you now have an insight as to why she behaves the way she does. And it makes you not be able to dislike her as much.
I know. It sucks when people turn out to be complex individuals just like you. So crazy. I hate when that happens. Why aren't everyone else just simple and 2D characters?
Right. And then from there, we move on to crazy Lisa.
Yes. Lisa is like the anti-mom, which is fine. I'm all about like progressive women being very entrepreneurial. But she was like, I hate board games. Like, I could never do Monopoly because I don't want to be talking about fake money. I want to be talking about real money. So you know what the Barlows do on their family game night, I guess? They set New Year goals.
Yeah, it's basically like, I'm taking you, small child, who still qualifies for Happy Meals. And it's like, what are your life goals?
Yeah, literally, I think the youngest is 7 and the other is like 13 or something. Yes, what is your 5-year plan? Where do you see yourself in 5 years? It's like, I don't know, 5th grade?
Which now explains the whole grit above their bed.
And hustle, yeah.
And hustle.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally, it's like she's trying to she's trying to somehow raise mini moguls. Like, she's trying to figure out how you do that from, like, the grip.
She's like, gotta raise mini moguls for dummies. But, yeah, no, she has them write down their goals, like, for the year. And they definitely have some interesting goals for such young boys, but I guess it's not that crazy. The eldest son, Jack, he wants to get shredded and become a lady slayer to get chicks.
Yeah, I know, which is, again, you would think as a very self-accomplished businesswoman that she might have said to Jack, you know, maybe you should be thinking about something a little bit deeper than that. And women are not just objects. They have brains and they can she wasn't going to go there.
She seemed pretty okay with the plan.
And then young Henry, who we visited him the last time and he thought a commandment was not to watch porn, wants his first kiss.
Yes, I mean, that's fair. It starts young.
And so, no porn, but he's going to fantasize about his first kiss and, his idea of having three children.
He wants triplets. I mean, how do you go from first kiss to triplets? Someone didn't watch The Miracle of Life when they were seven, unlike I did.
It was important. I was empowering you with knowledge.
Fuck the stork. We gotta just see it all. Then we see Lisa's goals, which, I've just come to realize that Lisa is, capitalism incarnate. Like, she is capitalism's wet dream. Because she's pretty much, all of her goals are business oriented. Probably the one non-business oriented goal was that she wants to be a better listener. Because as her husband, John, said, I believe, that 90% of their relationship is business related, which is that really much of a relationship?
I know. It sounds like, they're more like business partners
who just happen to have slept with each other
than life partners. And literally, she looks at him as someone who's just there to help her get through her day. Like, get me a Diet Coke. Like, and I'll drive with you and that'll be our alone time.
No, exactly. It just, her idea about a relationship is so one-sided. I mean, she's kind of almost like the opposite of a misogynist. She's like an andronist, where she's just like, my man must serve me.
Exactly.
Do everything for me. But yeah, so she says she's like, enjoys working, which, that's psychotic. She's demented.
Well, no. I mean, if you enjoy your job, it's not like you're really working. You enjoy what you're doing. But she just seems a little bit like, I don't know, like it's one thing to enjoy your job and enjoy and being in the moment. She like enjoys the thought of her work, which I think is a little bit different.
See, but that's the thing. It's weird. Like she can't spend 5 minutes not working. It doesn't seem like there's like an extended period of time. I don't think this woman knows how to take a day off, which is concerning. And I'm sure for John, she's like, please spend time with me. Please talk to me other than, in a business context. Because in that scene, after they do their goals for the year, he's like, did you mean what you said by you not wanting to take on new projects and things that don't align with what you want to do? And as he's talking to her, she's like, oh, wait, can you hold that thought for a minute? I'm on the phone right now. So like literally 5 minutes after saying she wanted to be a better listener and be more present, she's already failing. She's failing 5 minutes in.
Yeah, I think the thing is he was just asking for a little time where they could be together. Like basically he just feels like he's not, again, being heard. So that's a little bit of a problem. And then she starts musing about how, she wants to be a billion-dollar brand, which is fine. I think, you should have those kinds of goals if you're in the business world. You should be able to lay out that plan. But then she says she sees herself as Warren Buffett. And I'm like, okay, you're just not Warren Buffett.
Yeah, I mean, I think her husband's just begging to have some time off and for them to, be with each other, a crazy concept for a married couple. And she's just like, no, I want to be a billionaire. And I don't think that's a bad thing. So shut up and get into bed.
Yeah, I just, at the end, you just felt like he was an employee who, like, when people say, when the bosses come out and say, we're going to do this. We're a team. Everybody, put in your ideas. And so he put in his idea. And she was like, yeah, no, that's not going to work. Next.
Like, shut up. Do we have somebody else? Anyone raise their hand?
Yeah. So, poor guy. I mean, I think she is just very, very driven, which, again, as a woman, I'm not trying to say that's a bad thing. I think it's really great to see women who are, figuring out what they want to do, going for it, getting what they need. But you can't be as bad as a man. Like, you have to be able handle if you have a husband or a relationship or children. It is the thing that's difficult being a woman and being successful because you have all these other roles. But I don't think that you should sacrifice that time that you have with young children. And it's even weirder that she's trying to co-opt them into this little billionaires academy, I think, is the sad thing about this. She's, I mean, that's what they're, you know, she wants to get them, you know, aiming towards their ultimate goals. And luckily theirs are just about women.
And Fortnite.
Right.
But yeah, no, but I mean, my thing though, is that I wouldn't even hold the double standard. If this was a man constantly blowing off his wife, I think that's wrong too. So I think it's just, you have a relationship, whether you're a woman or a man, you should put some time into it.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I think I just felt like by the end of that entire sequence, John just seemed like an employee. Anyway, so we move on to our last scene of
Whitney.
The episode, which is Whitney, and she is having to go check in on her dad because he felt like it was time for him to leave sober living.
Yeah, this was such a weird location for this conversation. They were at like the trampoline park, seeing the grandkids. And he was just like, yeah, you know, I talked to my therapist the other day and she and I agree that I'm ready to leave and I'm ready to get back out there in the real world, which just seems a little fake to me. The program is 90 days. I highly doubt his therapist was be like, yeah, I think you're good to go, even though you've been here 3 times and had to come back each time. So yeah, 21 days in, you're fine.
Yeah, it's clear that he is actually struggling with this part of his recovery. And I mean, he was very, I mean, I think they had a very honest conversation about the fact that when he was in actual rehab, there was a lot of accountability. He had to do the program. He had to go to the classes. He had to go to therapy. And there were no distractions, no temptations, nothing out there. And his problem just seems to be like reentering society. Like, so having to be in sober living and living with other individuals and trying to figure out how to make it in the world, but still having a little bit of accountability is just not where he wants to be. And he literally, it's clear that he wants to run before he can walk.
Oh, 100%. And I think he's just like, I don't want any more rules. And look, 21 days, I did it, no hands. But, you know, he still's got the training reels on, so it's pretty easy to do no hands.
Exactly.
And Whitney's rightfully distressed, and she's just not believing his readiness to re-enter society.
But again, it shows why we love Whitney so much, because she is really there for him. She's struggling a little bit because, again, this is a child trying to parent a parent, and that is a difficult position to be in. And she is trying to make him see, not so much like she's, I mean, it's really great because she's not kind of saying, I feel hurt by what you've done, or all the things that you've done is have hurt the family. She's like, I really want you to be there because you're a great guy for our kids. You know, you're going to be a great grandpa and I'm glad that you're here. And, you know, you just need to keep going on this path so that it can spend a lot more time with you and they can know how amazing you are, because she knew who he was before he got hooked on painkillers.
Yeah. And I hope she gets through to him. But moving on, we have a scene with Meredith, Jen, and Heather. They all went out to dinner at some Italian restaurant. And they're all, you know, talking, being open and honest with each other. And, you know, Jen, the our oh-so-lovable pot stirrer, was like, so what's up with you and Seth?
Yeah, it was a little bit weird in terms of, I don't know. I mean, obviously, all these housewives dinners, they kind of, the way the editing goes, they probably go, they cut right to the chase. So it makes it seem like it's at the beginning. I'm not sure that it was, but this time it just seemed a little bit too abrupt.
I mean, even Meredith's face looked a little like, where is this coming from? Because they were asking about her slut phase. Like, oh, like everyone, when they get separated, has a little bit of a hoe face. And she just looks so uncomfortable.
Well, and to say that is like also one of those things where like, you're kind of projecting a who you are. Like, it's not like a thing. Like, it's individual with people. I don't think everybody has, you know, this kind of date around phase. And it's clear that Meredith has been working hard to keep the whole separation under wraps. So I don't think that even if she were doing that, she would do it in Salt Lake City, or she would do it anywhere that people would see it. So, you know, she wants to put up a front and she wants to be that woman who's got it all together. But then they start to talk, you know, a lot about how, you know, what the real problem is between she and Seth.
Yeah. And she kind of just boils it down to they don't know how to communicate, which in my head, they've been together like, what, 21, 22, 23 years, whatever, in the 20s, mid 20s. And if you haven't learned how to communicate in 20 plus years, will you ever learn to communicate? Is it just, maybe you should just cut bait.
Well, I think when you look back and they're kind of, she's kind of discussing, you know, over the last few episodes, you get these snippets of what their lifestyle was like. And the fact that she has always kind of had to follow him to every place. So she's always been the person making the sacrifice. And once they get to Salt Lake City, she finds kind of a location that works. She finds something that's good for business. She enjoys the people that she's working around. She has a group of friends. And she's like, hey, the kids are gone. Like, they're literally, they're out of the nest. And I don't necessarily have to be going from place to place so that we can have this nuclear family unit. So maybe it's time for you, Seth, to do this. And in terms of, I think marriages go through lots of, you know, as most relationships do, lots of growing. And, you know, you have this time when you have kids and you're raising kids where your communication really is about who's doing what and what time you have to be somewhere. So the thing is, I think they've grown from there. And now it's like, she's like, wait a minute, I don't have to follow you around anymore. So I think the thing is, they may have been able to communicate early on. And then they kind of went into, okay, life is happening kind of thing. And then the fact that they had such a transient life where it was like, basically you'd get there, she'd establish her business. She would, you know, the kids would get friends and then all of a sudden they'd have to move again for Seth's work. And I think she's just trying to say that, okay, now I'm trying to communicate where I am and that this is probably, I don't have to follow you around anymore. You can make decisions about where we're going to live and what we're going to do. So I would just kind of push back a little bit when you're saying, well, if they don't know how to communicate yet, I just think they've gotten to a different point in their life. And this part of the communication isn't working anymore.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, my thing though, is that she was saying it's always has been their problem. Like since the beginning, it's been their problem.
Yeah, I just think I just think it's a little bit, it may have been like how they communicated was their problem. But the fact that now, you know, she's saying things and it sounds more like she's upset because she's saying things and he's not listening.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure, maybe was not always the case with them. But now this is the central part of why they're having problems.
Yeah. But Jen was definitely pushing back on Meredith saying, oh, are you sure you're not seeing anyone? Like, would you hate it if Seth was seeing someone else?
Yeah. It was like, she's like, I know something in her confessional. It was definitely to the audience. I know stuff that I'm not going to tell you about.
But I'm going to tell you about
it. Yeah, because I'm just going to keep dropping all these, you know, hints and trying to like imply things, with, you know, and I don't, you know, I'm not going to tell you what it is. But I want you to ask me about it so that, you know, I can then somehow drop some knowledge on you and you'll see Meredith in a totally different way.
Yeah, I mean, again, even though they've kind of reconciled and they're obviously having dinner and, you know, they're not seemingly having problems, it's just so shitty that she is still, you know, talking behind her back and just spilling all of her business, you know, across town. And I mean, it doesn't stop just at that dinner. We see Jen in action again at Whitney's house on the pole when Whitney was trying to teach Jen how to pole dance. Obviously didn't go well. I mean, I couldn't get on a pole either. Whitney made it look perfect. Jen was like the modern woman. And we're just like, I don't fucking know. But anyways, after the two attempts of Jen, she brought up, oh, have you heard about Meredith and Seth? And, you know, I know that she's probably getting it somewhere else, implying that Meredith is seeing someone. But then was like, oh, well, I can't tell you. You have to ask Meredith.
Right. And basically, it's, again, one of those things where she's just throwing some chum out there. And she's just trying to, like, muddy the water so that everybody starts really wondering what's actually going on with Meredith and Seth. Which, again, is not, friends don't do that to friends. You don't, like, sit there and, you know, kind of cast aspersions on people's relationships. I mean, they're having their problems. Let them have their problems. It's their own personal business. Stay out of their business and quit going around to the girlfriends and trying to like say, hey, maybe you should think about that. Like, you know, if you're not getting it at home, I'm like, anyway, it's not her place. Yeah, I love that it's not my place. Well, it's not your place to be talking about Meredith.
Oh, yeah, I know. I mean, Jen was like, yeah, it's not my place to say. And but she says it anyway. So it's just like, why even with the false platitudes kind of thing? But I don't know. As a viewer, I love it because I want to hear the gossip and I want to, you know, have a little bit of the tension and the drama. But like, just from a human perspective, that's just not cool. And Jen should know better.
I just think this is her way of setting her up as I'm the pot stirrer. I'm the person who's going to move the story along.
Is that who you want to be?
Well, so a lot of people do. I mean, literally, you know, you look at most Housewives franchises, there's always one of them that's trying to be the pot stirrer.
And they're always like, I'm not the pot stirrer.
I know. It's like hilarious.
But let me ask you some very pointed questions.
Right. But it's interesting just to see how that kind of all kind of filters through in terms of, you know, Housewives pot stirrers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're in all the franchises, really. But yeah, no, that kind of is where the episode ends. We get a little preview of next week's, and I so lovingly call it Marriage is Crumbling, because we see a scene of Lisa and John at dinner where they're discussing their relationship, and Lisa just kind of rebuffs John at every pass, kind of like, shut up, I don't care about your complaints about this relationship, is going fine, now let's go home. And then we have Meredith and Seth, who has come into town. And it seems like they're trying to work it out, but, you know, there's never a happy ending.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how things go. And anyway, we'd like to just say thanks to everybody who's been listening. I'm very excited about the different folks that are listening. So if you're out there, shout out to Mexico City.
Yes, and Germany.
Bienvenidos.
Bienvenidos. Bienvenue. guten Tag. hello. Thank you so much for listening this far into our ramblings. We really do appreciate it. And we're glad that it's not just us getting to hear our lovely thoughts on reality TV.
So if there's a place wherever you're listening to your podcast, give us a like, send us some comments,
a review, and we'd love it if you'd follow us on our socials on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. It's just Met Gala Luncheon, like you see on your podcast. And we shall see you in the next one. I'm excited.
Yeah, don't forget to like and subscribe. See you next time.
Bye.